This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. I'm Chris. I'm hearing the weirdest echo in my headphones here. We're doing the show live from Seattle today, and looking forward to a fine and fascinating day. Starting out our first hour, as always, it's anything goes Friday, by the way, for the rest of the day, but starting out our first hour, as always, on Fridays with Senator Bernie Sanders. I think of him as America's senator. He's not a Democrat or Republican. The independent from Vermont. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here. Boy, a lot on the agenda here. Global warming, big headline I'm seeing on a lot of news sites that the UN yesterday issued a report that we're awful close to a possible point of no return.
Well, I tell you, you can't look at the front pages of newspapers without seeing tragedy or potential tragedy. You know, to what degree what's going on in California is related to the drought there and to the heat waves that they've been happening. That remains a possibility. Certainly Georgia is undergoing one of the worst droughts in their history. We're seeing all over the world weather problems that are unprecedented in modern history. And to my mind, it's very clear that Congress has got to be extremely bold to lower carbon dioxide emissions, to move this country away from fossil fuels, to move this country into sustainable energy. I mean, the bad news is that if we don't go forward, you're going to look at more and more tragedies all over this planet. But the good news is, in many ways, we know what we have to do. We know the enormous amount of energy that we're wasting. The idea that we're driving vehicles today that get worse mileage per gallon than 20 years ago is beyond comprehension. The idea that we have a rail system that is nowhere even near where Japan is, where Europe is, where even China is beginning to move, is beyond comprehension. The idea that in rural areas in Vermont and throughout America we don't even have public transportation and we continue to be as dependent on the automobile as we are is beyond comprehension. The idea that we're wasting enormous amounts of energy in our homes and our offices, factories, schools, and we know how to save that energy is beyond comprehension. So what we're trying to do right now is, it turns out I'm on the subcommittee of the Environmental and Public Works Committee, which is dealing right now with the global warming bill. The good news is that for the very first time, there is legislation which is being authored by Senators Lieberman and Warner, which begins the process of moving us toward a cap and trade system, begins the process of telling polluters that they have to pay as they destroy the environment. The bad news is, in my mind, that this bill is much, much too conservative. In the next couple of weeks, as we move to subcommittee and full committee and on the floor, I will be doing everything I can to see that we emphasize solar technology, the huge potential that we have in solar, that we have in wind, that we have in geothermal, and energy efficiency. I think we can solve this problem if we are smart, if we're aggressive, if we're prepared to take on powerful special interests. So that is an issue that every American, every person in this world must be concerned about.
Indeed, indeed. And I understand that there's a bill called the Labor HHS bill.
Yeah, Labor HHS is the, there are, if my memory is correct, about 12 major appropriations bills, which is how we fund the government. Labor HHS deals with, obviously, health and human services, education, many of the social issues and concerns that many of us are concerned with. The bill was put together by Senator Harkin, chaired that committee of Iowa, who did, I think, a very good job. His problem is essentially he didn't have enough money to do what has to be done. So he had to take from Peter to provide funding for Paul, and he had a difficult time in doing that. One of the areas in the bill that I am happy about, because I've been working very hard in Vermont on this, is that we got a significant increase in funding, $250 million, which is the largest increase in funding that the Federally Qualified Health Center Program has ever received. And this will enable the expansion or the creation of hundreds and hundreds of new community health centers all over the United States of America. In Vermont, we've got six. I hope to have another three or four in the next few years, which will mean at least that in Vermont, we should have these health centers in every part of the state so that people can get good quality health care, dental care, low-cost prescription drugs, mental health counseling. That's what these centers do. They're democratically run by the users rather than by people on top. So it's a very strong program. We want to greatly expand this program. At the same time, we want to also expand funding for the National Health Service Corps, because we're running into a real crisis in terms of the number of doctors, nurses, dentists that we have in America. We've got to train and educate those people so that they can serve us, especially in rural underserved areas. So I think that was a step forward in terms of providing health care to people who don't have it.
Yeah, indeed. John McCain is quite outspoken about how waterboarding is torture. I mean, he's made some very unambiguous, very explicit and strong statements. This is torture. This is he called it an exquisite, meaning in the most negative sense imaginable. He said this is stuff that Pol Pot did. He said this is being used right now on monks in Burma. And yet Michael Mukasey and now Rudy Giuliani seem to be reluctant to define it as such. What's going on with the Mukasey hearing?
Well, I think I was the first member of the Senate to say that I will not be voting for Mr. Mukasey, and that is because of how he responded to the questions asked by members of the Judiciary Committee. And the issue is not just waterboarding. That is very, very important. And the issue of torture, I don't want to spend too much time on it. It's not only a reflection of what our country stands for or doesn't stand for, and how we are increasingly looked down upon and not respected by people all over the world, in contrast to what used to be the case as to how people looked up to the United States. And certainly Guantanamo, torture, what we're doing in Iraq is very much part of that. But in terms of Mukasey, I think the key issue here is we have a president who clearly does not understand what the Constitution is about. Our president has the worst record on civil liberties probably of any president, and certainly in our lifetime. And a president who believes that in the name of fighting terrorism, he could do almost anything that he wants to do. I strongly disagree with that. I think we've got to be vigorous in protecting the American people from terrorism. It is a very dangerous issue. I do not minimize it for a minute. But I think you could do it with strong law enforcement. You could do it within the context of the Constitution. So if the government believes somebody is involved in terrorism, you go to a court, you got a court order, you got a warrant, you can tap somebody's phone, you investigate somebody, that's fine. But you can't do it simply because the president of the FBI thinks that somebody is involved in terrorism. You need to go to a court to do it. And I'm not sure that Mukasey believes that. And I think that he believes that the president does have expanded power. And as you know, the president believes this war on terror is never ending. And I think that that really undermines much of what our Constitution is about. So I said that I think that based on what he said, this is not the man we need for attorney general. We need an attorney general who will explain what the Constitution is to the president of the United States. Mukasey does not appear to be that person to me. I will vote no. I'm beginning to hear some rumbling now that there will be other senators who have similar concerns.
And I understand you were involved yesterday with Senator Byron Dorgan about some Chinese sweatshop investigation?
Yeah. Byron had a very interesting hearing with some really wonderful people, some of whom I've known for many years. Charlie Kernaghan, does that name mean anything to you, Tom?
It sounds familiar, but I don't know why.
Charlie is head of a labor group in New York City who has been a leader around the world in exposing sweatshop labor in Latin America, in China, all over the world. He's the guy, you know, when you see these great exposés of some company, a well-known American company, and you find out where this product was made, half the time it's Charlie Kernaghan and his group of people. And Charlie was testifying along with a fellow named Mr. Wu, who had been jailed in China for a number of years because of his support of labor rights and opposition to the regime there, and some other people. And what we were hearing about are toys, the manufacturing of toys. We don't manufacture very many toys in America anymore. They're manufactured abroad in low-wage countries, a significant number in China. Mattel does a lot of manufacturing. They were hearing the same old story, that there are subcontractors of subcontractors of subcontractors. The bottom line is that you have people who are working 70 or 80 hours a week in horrendous working conditions manufacturing these toys that as many Americans now know, many of these toys are unhealthy. They may have lead in it, other types of chemicals, which we would not allow if produced in this country. One of the points that I made that came out in the hearing is the Chamber of Commerce thinks the Chinese government is too liberal, giving too many rights to their workers. Can you believe that?
Whoa.
Yeah. So
that's like Orwell. I mean,
it is.
George Orwell. It's our brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. Our number 866-303-2270. Give us a shout. You'll have an opportunity to talk with Senator Bernie Sanders right after this break.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Whoa. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, our brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. His website, by the way, sanders.senate.gov. He's got a great newsletter and a lot of good information there on his website. Pretty regularly updated, so it's worth visiting from time to time. Our website, tomhartman.com, however you spell it, will get you there. And for our live chat room and my writings and things. And our blog over at airamerica.com. So lots of places to go and things to do. Bernie, shall we take some calls here?
Let's do it.
Okay, Matt in Castleton, Vermont. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. I just wanted to thank Bernie for being the first senator to come out and say he's not going to confirm this guy for not being able to clearly say what is torture.
Good.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Bernie. Chris, in Classen, California, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Good morning, Senator Sanders, Tom, and America. I'm very concerned about America's propensity towards constantly being at war or beating the war drums to go to war.
Yep.
I recently saw a couple of things on the internet. One was Aaron Russo's last interview on InfoWars. I think that America should see. Also, I just saw a documentary called Zeitgeist.
Yeah, I've seen it, Chris. Do you have a question for Bernie?
Yes, Bernie. What do you think about how can we stop these people?
Chris,
we are making money for us going to war.
Chris, you know, you've raised a very, very important and profound question. And that is, look at all of the problems facing our country, all of the things that we have to. We're looking at global warming. We're looking at 47 million people without any health insurance. We're looking at a nation where poverty is expanding and the middle class is shrinking and the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. We're looking at hundreds of millions of children throughout the world living in horrendous, horrendous poverty. And almost the only thing that Bush is talking about is war, war, war. Yeah, international terrorism is serious business. And we've got to do a lot better job of combating it. But I share your concern that this constant emphasis is on more and more money for the military. We forget to talk about some of the other huge issues facing our nation and the world. And frankly, even in dealing with issues like international terrorism, trust me, it is not going to be nuclear weapons and aircraft carriers that are going to win that fight. We're going to have to win the hearts and the minds and the souls of people and make them understand that it is the United States of America, not Osama bin Laden and his, you know, fanaticism and craziness, that we are on their side because we're going to improve lives for their kids. It is tough stuff. But I'll tell you what drives some of us in the Senate a little bit nuts is the huge amounts of money we spend on war and on the military and how we spend so little on issues of concern to the middle class of this country. We made a big deal. We passed a very good higher education bill. I mean, that's like a couple of that will make college more affordable for middle-income, lower-income kids. We're talking about a couple of months in the war in Iraq. Bush, as you know, has vetoed the ESSER program, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that spending $35 billion more to provide health insurance for kids over a five-year period, $7 billion a year, my God, we just can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know what the war in Iraq is?
Yeah,
$10 billion a month.
Right.
All right. This is the insanity in terms of priorities. They want to give $1 trillion in tax breaks to the wealthiest 0.3% by repealing the estate tax over a 20-year period. So I think Chris's point is a good point. You know, for Bush, I think 9/11 was what, I mean, his almost his entire focus is on military, middle class shrinks, poverty increases, huge problems facing our country. It's time we redirected our priorities.
Yeah. And perhaps have a new Truman Commission to look into war profiteering?
Well, that is beginning to happen. I mean, that takes you to Blackwater, that takes you to private contractors, the waste of billions and billions and billions of dollars. We don't know where that money went. We certainly know that Iraq has not been rebuilt, but we do know that some corporations have made out like bandits.
Debbie in New York City, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. As a Democrat, I have observed both Senator Reid and Speaker Pelosi's, I think, ineffective, extremely ineffective leadership standing up against this administration. And I think actually most of the American public is actually siding with this opinion as well. Specifically, Senator Reid, it seems, most recently, is willing to cave in to this president's request for allowing the telecoms to have immunity. So my question for you, Senator, is there any discussion about changing the leadership and replacing Senator Reid? Obviously, I guess you can't do anything about Speaker Pelosi, but the fact that she will not address and put impeachment on the table for this administration is beyond me. But anyway, is there any sort of discussion for replacing the leadership of Senator Reid? And if not, could you please introduce it?
Well, all right, you got that. You've raised a 3-hour discussion here, Debbie. We got about 2 minutes to deal with it. I do not support impeachment for a number of reasons. But the issue of leadership and what the Democrats are doing in terms of FISA, the one issue that you raised, trust me, there is a lot of discussion going on, and a number of us do not believe in granting immunity to phone companies who we think illegally tapped into people's telephone lines and emails.
You guys are pushing back. Yep. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. 866-303-2270, 27 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
And this is the only way to make it happen, my friends, that we all work together, that we make it work, that we're here for each other, and that we be speaking to our elected representatives, both in the House and the Senate, but people whose job is to represent us, and, you know, let them know what we're thinking. It's really important. In fact, Bernie, before we go to the next caller, if you could just, you know, give a little riff on, you know, the last caller had asked about the leadership of Reid and Pelosi.
And here's what I think people have got to appreciate, is the job of Harry Reid and the job of Nancy Pelosi is trying to keep a very diverse constituency of members of the House and members of the Senate together. The truth of the matter is, it's not Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi who I think are the problem. The problem is that you have not a particularly progressive group in the Senate or in the House. The Democratic Party today is a centrist party. The Republican Party is pretty much a right-wing extremist party. That's where we are. Within the Democratic Party, you have some really strong progressives. You have some pretty conservative people. That's what you got. And Reid's job is to try to, with 51 votes is all he has, including Senator Lieberman, who leaves on certain issues, you have virtually no margin of error at all. On many key votes, you need 60 votes to end the Republican filibuster. The Republicans have been obstructing all over the place. So I think the blame is not Reid's or Pelosi's. I think the blame is that if people want to see progressive government, you don't have that in the Congress right now. And we need to elect progressive people. People who are prepared to take on big money interests. And, I mean, that's certainly...
Which means getting involved at the local issue and helping promote the, you know, progressive candidates.
Absolutely.
In both parties, frankly.
And it means being, or perhaps even a third party on occasions. And it means making sure you are putting pressure on your elected officials, knowing what the issues are and knowing how they vote, and getting explanations for them. There are some tough votes out there, and people have a right to tell you how they're voting. But that's what the problem is. The problem is not Reid's. If Reid had a progressive Senate, if he had, you know, 60 progressive senators, trust me, this world would be a very different place. He doesn't.
Yeah,
we couldn't even get on the Southwick vote for a judge.
Right.
We lost 10 Democrats.
Yeah, that's a tragedy. We need 50 or 60 Bernie Sanders and Russ Feingold in the U.S. Senate, I'll tell you. Anyhow, Terry in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. You're live and on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Tom, Bernie, it's an honor. First time caller. I'm listening to you on Sirius. Bernie, I truly believe that the coup d'etat that took place in 2000 has fermented to the point where the Republicans have the sound machine in place. They've got 30 to 35% of our population numbskulled. And I do believe that it's a matter of, the neocons' agenda to just keep running us into the ground until the point comes they say no more Social Security, no more Medicare. We don't have no money for it.
Well, Terry, let me give you, the good news is the American people are rebelling very, very strongly against this right-wing extremism and this neoliberal-type economic ideology. Where we are right now, and I think it's important to put these things in a context, is I just mentioned a moment ago that anyone who thinks we have a progressive Congress is wrong. We surely don't. On the other hand, it is not insignificant that in the last election we defeated right-wing extremism. We defeated them big time. And the Republicans right now are in a lot of trouble. They are in a lot of trouble. What most of the pundits who study these things tell us is that everything being equal, the Republicans are going to lose more seats in the Senate. The Republicans are going to lose more seats in the House. And for the Republicans to gain the White House, they are the underdogs. They may yet make it, but they are the underdogs. So to answer Terry's question is, I don't agree. I mean, I think, for example, looking at Social Security, you're not hearing Bush talking anymore about privatizing Social Security. It ain't going to happen. That is not going to happen. You're not going to privatize Medicare. You're not going to give more tax breaks to billionaires. We have defeated right-wing extremism. What we have not yet done is elected the kinds of people we need to move forward with a progressive agenda so that we ask the billionaires to start paying their fair share of taxes so we can fund the needs of the American people, lower taxes on the middle class. That we have not done. We certainly don't have the agenda now to be as aggressive as we should be in terms of global warming. In terms of health care, we have not even scratched the surface. So right-wing extremism is on the defensive, and that is very, very significant. Our job now is to put together a progressive agenda.
Amen. Martin in Illinois, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Oh, hello there, Bernie.
Hi.
First of all, kudos to you. You're a rare breed. You're a politician who I can hear is honest and principled. And to those of us who are utterly cynical about the political system, it seems it doesn't matter who gets in there. The same basic agenda of screwing us all continues. We've got a Democratic majority. Who would know? The same garbage continues. Bush has got his support. So for many of us, we're saying, to heck with the whole political process. It's completely broken. The government's broken. We need to engage on a program of organized civil disobedience. We have to somehow or other get a Democratic program back in this country, and it's not going to be through the Republican and Democratic Party.
Martin, have you ever shown up at a Democratic Party meeting?
Sorry?
Have you ever shown up at a Democratic Party meeting, a local meeting?
No, I have not done
I would,
that.
I would respectfully suggest
My
that
wife
you...
does.
Yeah, okay, good. I was going to say, I respectfully suggest that that's a good and powerful place to begin. Bernie, your thoughts?
Well,
cynicism in America. It just seems to me like this is what the conservatives want. They want us to hell with it. I'm not going to vote.
Well, you see, the answer is that cynicism is you're exactly right, Tom. That is exactly what Karl Rove wants. They want low voter turnouts. They want people to say, well, my vote doesn't matter. The answer is that you can make change by getting involved in the grassroots. There are a lot of things that people can do, not even in terms of quote-unquote political action. You know, you and I, Tom, have talked many times about media. Very soon, Mr. Martin, who's head of the FCC, is going to roll out a plan to further deregulate media, to allow fewer and fewer large corporations to control what the American people see, hear, and read. you know what? We can defeat that effort at the grassroots level. Some of us in Senate and in the House are going to work very hard on that. But people can be talking to their local radio stations, could be talking to their local newspapers about why they're not carrying progressive columnists or progressive talk shows.
Yeah, David Sirota's got a new column out. It's available nationally syndicated. And I'm just astounded when I see all these right-wingers who have these huge nationally syndicated columns, and David is really working hard just to get, you know, one more newspaper this week kind of thing.
Well, give you an example. Rick Santorum, who was recently defeated in the last election as senator from Pennsylvania, is apparently writing a column for the Philadelphia Inquirer?
Yeah, yeah.
And here's a guy who got no votes in Philadelphia.
Right. In fact, lives in Virginia.
I mean, this is a guy who got overwhelmingly defeated, and they give him a column. I mean, this is what the corporate media is about. My point here is responding to Martin is cynicism is just not good enough. And furthermore, there are some things. I know people are dumping on Democratic control of the Congress. Understand that in the Senate, it is very, very slim, and you need 60 votes on many important provisions. But let's not forget, finally, the minimum wage was raised to 7.25 over a period of a few years. Not enough. It's a step forward. A very significant higher education bill was passed, substantially increasing Pell Grants, making college education more affordable, lowering interest rates, cutting them in half for people in college as they pay back their loans, and developing a very strong debt forgiveness program for those who go into public service. It is a strong piece of legislation. So there are some good things. We're beginning to make some progress on an energy bill to adequately fund solar and wind and take away tax breaks that have been given to oil. I certainly agree that we're not doing enough and it is not aggressive enough, but it is wrong to say that nothing is happening.
Chris, and thank you. Chris in Vernon, New Jersey, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. It's funny, Bernie, you said that we are starting to rebel against them. Do you know anything about the bill that passed on October 16th at the House of Representatives? It's called the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act.
It passed in the House.
Yes, but and it includes that it talks about that they could go after political organizations and political groups and basically everything I've been warning people about how right now they're spying on the terrorists, but we just found out the other day that terrorism watch list is 755,000 people.
Yeah. You know, that's Tom, Chris makes an interesting point. Did you see that that article where they're talking about 755,000 people on a list?
Yeah, like there's that many terrorists in the United States.
I mean, it's something I will check up on. That just seems very, I don't know what that word terrorist means and why people are on a list, but 755,000 people on a list, man. That sounds like a hell of a lot of people.
Yeah, there was a U.S. Activist, peace activist, who was just, she was going to be giving a talk in Canada today, and a member of parliament was going to be there, and there was, you know, I mean, this was an official thing. She was invited, and she was stopped at the border and denied entry.
Yeah.
On the list. I mean, you look at this and you just say, you know, what's going on here? I mean, I don't think we're a police state yet, but unless we start speaking out,
yeah.
Or am I being paranoid?
No, you're not being. I mean, you know, sometimes we get calls from people who, you know, think everything is rigged and Karl Rove is running the world, and that's not true. On the other hand, you do have a president who certainly does not believe in many aspects of our Constitution, and we've got to be very vigilant about that.
Yeah, he said it would be a lot easier if it was a dictatorship, just as long as he's a dictator. Democracy will survive if we get involved and if we keep staying active and supporting folks like you. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com, 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
You're not alone. Never thought I'd find the road to freedom. Never thought I'd see you smile again. Never thought I'd have the chance to tell you.
It's the Road to Freedom right here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio. Our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders with us, 1-866-303-2270. Your calls for the Senator, John in Cape Coral, Florida. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hey, good afternoon. Question is, the gentleman earlier that, it's a statement first and a question, the gentleman earlier that tried to paint the elephants in the Democratic Party as one and the same, that they don't get anything done. How do we know that he is actually a Democrat?
Yeah, he might have been a Republican who was calling, trying to convince us all that we should get involved.
You know, I think what ends up, I don't think that that's the case, and I think there are a lot of people who are discouraged and they want to see the Democrats be more aggressive. I hear that all over the place. But I think to do what Ralph Nader did years ago and to say there is no difference between the two parties is wrong. There are huge differences between the two parties. The question is, are the Democrats, on the other hand, being as aggressive as they should be in protecting the rights of working people and the middle class, addressing global warming, taking on Bush, moving us toward a national health care program? The answer is no. So I think, you know, things are more complicated than someone will make it out. Both parties are the same. No, they're not. One is a right-wing extremist party. One is kind of a centrist party, maybe tilting a little bit to the left. And that's a real distinction. On the other hand, what our job is, it seems to me, is at the grassroots level, elect people who are progressives, people who are prepared to stand up to the big money interests that have so much power in Washington, prepared to defend our Constitution, etc., and B, you know, maintain contact with what is going on and make sure that your representatives are voting the way you want them to vote. That's what we have to do.
We're broadcasting live today, by the way, from Seattle, Washington, Talk 1090. It's great to be here. I was just informed earlier this morning that this show is the number one show on the station. And Philip in Tacoma, Washington, listening on KPTK, you're on the air. Hey, Philip.
Mr. Hartman?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hey, it's an honor to get through. You have a wonderful show, and I'm a big fan of Bernie Sanders. Thank you very much. I will keep this very quick and simple. The Democratic Party was elected to end a war, and all the signs look like the Bush administration is going to bomb Iran just to make the Democratic Party look complicit. And my question is simple. What is the Senate going to do the day after they start bombing Iran?
Okay, well, 2 points. I want Phil to understand that the House, at least, passed legislation that had a very clear timetable to bring our troops home from Iraq. In the Senate, we don't have 60 votes. I mean, people say the Democrats control it. Harry Reid is head of it. That's true. It takes 60 votes to stop a filibuster. We don't have 60 votes. On a good day, we may have 4 or 5 Republicans, 50 people on our side. That's 56 votes. That doesn't do it. So you can blame Harry Reid till the cows come home, but we don't have the votes with a president who intends to keep this war going, I presume, for many more years. In terms of Iran, I voted certainly against the resolution.
That and the one that declared the Iranian militia a terrorist organization.
For the first time, making a country into, in a sense, an arm of the country, a terrorist organization. I think it was a very dangerous precedent. I have introduced the resolution, and other people have introduced similar resolutions that says that before the president thinks about attacking Iran, he's got to come for permission to the Congress. And by the way, I don't think he would get that permission. The idea of going into a third war, when the war in Iraq has been so horrendously difficult, when you have a war in Afghanistan in which the Taliban is resurfacing, start another war against an even far more powerful country, which will lead to years and years and years of terrorist attacks against the United States and our allies, a huge unsettling all over the Persian Gulf and the Middle East. I think that is just completely off the wall. So I hope that we don't have to respond what happens the day after. I hope that we make sure that that doesn't happen at all. That would be just a total disaster.
Dave in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. I've got a question concerning FISA and the immunity for the telecoms. I'm strongly against this. However, if it does go through, I think it should be passed with a very strong and binding resolution there to fully investigate the Joseph Nachio case in Quest, because immunity would give the telecoms, it would let the guys that did the wrong thing off the hook, And the guy who did the right thing and said no clearly looks mm-hmm. like he was retaliated against by the federal prosecutor.
Yeah, he's in jail right now.
He's out on bail.
He's out on bail, but... Okay.
6 years he's facing because he did the right thing and said, no, it looks clear looking over the case that this was clear retaliation. We know the federal prosecutors have a problem.
Dave, I think you make a good point on that. I agree with that. I think we should take a hard look at that. Quest was the largest phone companies that refused to go along with the Bush administration.
Yeah, they were basically the only phone company that said no, and now the CEO who made that decision finds himself facing 6 years in prison. You know, just like Don Siegelman, the governor down in Alabama, who started raising questions about vote fraud when Riley beat him in the election when they found 13,000 votes in the middle of the night, and suddenly he's in jail. He's actually in jail right now. And it turns out that the federal prosecutor down there, the U.S. prosecutor, the U.S. attorney who kept his job, was the guy who gave the testimony that convicted Siegelman gave equally damning testimony about two Republicans, and neither of them were ever even investigated, much less prosecuted. I mean, it's just pardon my rant here, but this is totally strange. Anyhow, Catherine in Los Angeles, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. We've got about a half a minute here before we've got to wrap up this hour.
Hello?
Catherine.
Hello.
Catherine, quickly, please.
Hi. Is this Catherine? Tom?
Yep.
Tom?
Yeah, it is, and I'm sorry, Catherine, we're out of time. Bernie, final thoughts?
The final thought is the point that we make every week. People have got to be actively involved in the political process. Let's make sure that the next election is one in which progressives win a sweeping victory.
Amen. Well said. Thanks so much. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, the website. Thank you, Bernie. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
And welcome back. Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on pretty much any topic you want throughout the rest of the day here. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, airamerica.com for our blog. Before we get to that, however, most of us saw, I'm guessing probably most of you saw the photographs or the video of Desiree Ferruz, the woman who, with what looked like bloody hands, approached Condi Rice as she was about to testify before Congress, telling her that she had blood on her hands, and then along with Badia Benjamin and others from Code Pink, was dragged out of that House hearing room. As I recall, it was a House. And Desiree, I believe, just got out of jail and is on the line with us. Desiree, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
The website, by the way, I should make sure everybody knows. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's CodePinkDigit4Peace.org, right?
The one we most commonly distribute is CodePinkAlert.org.
Okay, CodePinkAlert.org. Great. Thank you very much. And you are a member of Code Pink, and you're also a house mom?
Right. I left my home and my job in March this year to take on the role as house mom. We have a house now on Capitol Hill that is rented with the generosity of donations of members from around the country and the world. And so it enables activists to come, have a place to stay, not worry about, their shelter while they take part in actions on Capitol Hill. And I am the house mom, so that just means I get to do most of the grocery shopping and logistics, making sure people have linens and soap and whatever they need.
You know what this reminds me of is Rosa Parks. I mean, she was a member of a sort of a similar group, and groups all, during the Civil Rights Movement, there were groups all over the United States like this, and certainly during the anti-war movement as well. It's marvelous what you're doing. Tell us what happened on that day.
Well, that day was typical when Congress is in session and there's hearings on Capitol Hill. We try to attend anything related to Iraq and Middle East policies. And we got in line early to make sure we would get seats close to the person testifying. We do that no matter who's testifying. We want to be close in front so that Congress can see that we are there, that we are watching, that we are reminding them of our dissent. And so we did get in. Most of us were in the second or third row before the congresspeople entered, and to our surprise, Condoleezza came in before the congresspeople were even at their seats, and I took that opportunity to approach her and tell her how I felt about her and our foreign policy.
Yeah, and what was her response?
She barely flinched. I'm not quite sure she even did, and she said, as the Secret Service agent grabbed me, said, "Oh, leave her alone." No, I'm sorry. "Oh, let her go." That's what he said.
Hmm. What's your take on that response?
I thought that was for the cameras, because there were a lot of cameras.
Yeah.
Right. And then I was escorted outside and arrested by Capitol Police.
So per, you know, to frame it, I suppose you could say her response was sort of a variation on, there's no droid here, just keep moving along. Nothing to look at here. This is not a news event. That kind of thing.
Right.
But I
cannot help but think that, knowing how unhappy most citizens are and that this is an open hearing, she had to have expected some form of protest in that hearing.
Yeah. Now you and then they went back and they took out everybody else who, or at least this is how it looked on the video, that they just went through the gallery and took out everybody who was wearing a Code Pink t-shirt, handcuffed them, hauled them out. Is that what happened?
As I was in the hall being arrested, I didn't get to see, but till after we were released on video, what it looked like, and from what I heard from my colleagues, they were just told to be removed from the room, that Congressman Lantos did not ask for us to be arrested, but that's indeed what happened. One of my colleagues was just trying to take a photo, several rows behind from where we were, and she was arrested. The other colleague was arrested just for leaning forward to get a better view. She was arrested. And then Medea Benjamin was arrested later, after the hearing had begun, after the congressman had gaveled later, much later, for holding up a peace sign.
Wow. That's a truly criminal act, holding up a peace sign.
Can you imagine? Yeah. We're flabbergasted.
So they took you to jail.
That's correct.
And you just got out.
I got out last night.
Okay. So what happened during that period of time? What was that experience?
You spend several hours in the Capitol Police Station, where they fill out numerous copies of some paperwork, and so you're handcuffed to the wall, sitting on an uncomfortable hard bench in a very cold room, the woman who arrested me was filling out, you know, a narrative by hand, and then a sergeant came in and took over and redid the whole thing, and they said that I grabbed Condoleezza Rice. This is what the discussion was while I was in the room, and I never touched Condoleezza Rice. Mm-hmm. And so they're filling out this paperwork, and it takes some hours and hours and hours. And then I think around 6 p.m., I'm not even quite sure because I didn't have a clock there, they take all your possessions. When you come in, they take everything off of your jewelry, your ring, your watch, everything, your purse and everything, and inventory that and lock it up. And then later on, you put in a paddy wagon and sent to the Metropolitan Police Station, where they take pictures of you, all views and fingerprints, and then lock you up in a cell. And so I spent the night in that cell on a steel bed with no mattress, no towel, nothing. It's just you and a steel bed next to a toilet. And then in the morning, like at 5 a.m., they wake you up to take you to the court, and they hold you in a cell there all day until around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Then you're taken up to a judge to be arraigned. And then I was told to return back in December. My counsel that was appointed to me there told me not to discuss the details of my charges, so I'm not at liberty to say what my charges. Suffice it to say, I was charged with 3 crimes, and I will be reporting to the judge in December. And I have a stay away now. Neither any of us that were arrested at that event can return to Capitol Hill. We are now
they have
limited.
An injunction against you, or a restraining order kind of thing?
Well, they call it a stay away is how they a stay away
literally.
From a vicinity. And I received a stay away from Condoleezza Rice and a stay away from Capitol Hill, and they give you a map where they delineate where you can and cannot go. And at any point, an officer could arrest me and lock me up if I'm on any of those streets designated as the area of stay away.
We're talking about...
Medea has a stay away. I have a stay away. The other two women have stay away. So most of us who are what I call lifers here, that are here most of the time of the year doing these actions, have stay away. So we need more Americans. Where's that 70-something percent? We need them here.
Okay. And the website, once again, is...
CodePinkAlert.org.
PinkAlert.org. We're talking with Desiree Ferruz. She is the woman who approached Condi Rice with bloody hands, accusing her of having blood on her hands. Desiree, speak for a moment to critics who suggest that this is just theatrics. This gets in the way of getting the important business of Congress done, or, you know, serious political action kinds of things.
Well, that's not true, especially in this situation. The chairman of the committee, the Foreign Affairs Committee, that was about to be convened in that during that action, you know, after that action, had not yet reached his desk. None of the Congress people were seated at their places that I could see from where I was. I didn't see a single congressperson ready to work. And Condoleezza just walked in, and Congressman Lantos had not gaveled yet, so I did not disrupt any business of the day. Condoleezza went on and did her testimony right after I got arrested. So we did not disrupt the business of the day. And the reason why we do this creative lobbying is because our Congress people and senators are not listening to us. They're not reflecting the voice of the American people. They're ignoring us. The vote demonstrated in last November is not being reflected in the halls of Congress or on the Capitol floor.
Well, you're not a multimillion-dollar defense contractor with large donations to give them, you know.
That's right. And so we feel that it's necessary to, you know, voice up. You know, have our voices heard in these ways, because they're not listening to us otherwise. We've already done that. I mean, 5 years of this normal, traditional lobbying, letter writing, emailing, calling, office visits.
Time to speak out. It's absolutely time to speak out. Desiree Ferruz, CodePinkAlert.org, the website. Desiree, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for your interest. Send us reinforcements.
Okay, there you go. We got the word out. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Oval Office.
Hi, I have God calling for the President, please.
May I ask what it's in reference to?
Well, God's a bit upset.
The President implied on a number of occasions that he was personally chosen for office by God.
He's also said he consults with God on foreign policy matters, including Iraq.
But God doesn't recall any of this.
Also, God's against killing people.
Hold, please. I'm sorry, I have to take a message. The President's on a call now with Mr. Rove.
Yeah, what they do at the White House when God calls. Sorry, buddy, get in line. Speaking of which, FEMA meets the press, which happens to be FEMA. The Washington Post reporting today that FEMA held a news conference. Boy, they are learning the lessons of Katrina, I'll tell you. They held a news conference, which was carried live by Fox and many other news networks, in which the, quote, reporters, end quote, asking the questions turned out to be people like the head of public relations for FEMA. A bunch of FEMA people asking questions of the head of FEMA, so that Vice Admiral Harvey Johnson, the deputy administrator, could be the number two guy, and Mr. Johnson could be giving brilliant answers to tough questions. You guys are doing a great job, aren't you? Yeah. This is bizarre, to say the least. I mean, truly bizarre, to say the least. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Mark calling from Thailand. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. You're one of the programs I advise my left or centrist-leaning Republican friends to listen to, for a very, very well-balanced, very intellectual, very sharp and solid show.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you for that. One of the issue I would have, and perhaps a disagreement, is first an agreement and then a disagreement. I agree with you that political activism at the root level, at the group level, at the base level is extremely important.
At the party level?
At the party level.
Right.
But, Tom, you seem to diminish the value of in-the-streets nonviolent activism.
Then you misunderstand me, Mark, because I think in-the-streets nonviolent activism is vitally important. It's what ended the Vietnam War. It is what prevented Richard Nixon from dropping nuclear weapons on North Vietnam, we discovered 20 years later.
Good. Then
it's what, it's what ended legal segregation
in all the
United States.
All the time that I've listened to you, I have not heard you really promote that and say, get out there as you are active at the local level, get out there in the streets and march and show your political convictions publicly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's why we just had on
Desiree
from Code Pink, which, I mean, you talk about being out there. They're absolutely, you know, throwing themselves in front of the machine and from time to time getting rolled over.
It's precisely my point, and I appreciated your having the Code Pink people on. Because again, it was not until there were hundreds of thousands of people in the streets weekly in Bangkok that took down their corrupt government. It was not until the beautiful saffron-robed monks in Myanmar took to the streets and were being killed and beaten that the world stood up and took notice.
Right, and yesterday Aung San Suu Kyi met with...
It will not be until we as citizens take to the streets of America that our politicians, our Democratic politicians, even our Republican politicians will stand up and take notice. And more importantly, perhaps, our mainstream media will take notice and say, hey, these people are serious and we'd better listen to them.
Yep, absolutely right, Mark. As long as it's nonviolent,
I am absolutely, totally in favor of people
getting out on the streets, and I super congratulate the people like the women in black who are out there standing on street corners every day, just, you know, in silence, in opposition to this war. People who are, I mean, in Portland, it's a regular scene. I mean, the enough things going on every Sunday all across the United States, I am totally supportive of it, Mark.
I appreciate that. I'd like to hear you say that more on your show. I appreciate the grassroots level promotion that you do. That is incredibly important, but it is equally, if not as or more important, that we also show our support in the streets.
Yeah, well said. It's all part of one fabric.
I'd like to hear you say that a little bit more on the show.
Okay, you got it, Mark. It's all part of one fabric. Thank you very much, and thanks for listening to the web stream there in Thailand. Toby in Phoenix. Hey, Toby, got about a minute before we've got to take a break here, maybe a little less. What's up?
Okay, Tom, we have a website to help the troops get phone cards. They can't afford to call home, and I hope people will help us. This is nonprofit, although we don't have a 501c3 yet, but it's www.giphonehome.com, and we are out there working for the Democratic Party, for DFA, PDA, anything you can think of. But this is something that I think is nonpartisan and should be supported by everyone.
Okay, giphonehome.com, right, Toby?
Correct.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling, and thanks for the heads up and letting us know. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Your calls on anything. Anything goes Friday. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
866-302-2272.
Yeah, George, we're watching you. And Condi, yes, you have blood on your hands. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm broadcasting live today from Seattle from Talk 1090. And tonight at 7:30, I'll be at Elliott Bay Books signing Cracking the Code, my newest book. It's just out now. And so look forward to seeing you there, to the folks, to our many listeners in Seattle. Anderson Cooper moderated a special on CNN, or I guess it's an ongoing thing. I've caught bits and pieces of it on the environment, on basically the crashing environment. It's sort of a television version of Leonardo DiCaprio's movie The 11th Hour. And in it, he used the word global warming, and basically the entire power structure of, of Washington and certainly all the right-wing media. I mean, they came down on him like a ton of bricks. And yesterday, the Times of London, the British equivalent of the New York Times, owned, oddly enough, by Rupert Murdoch, ran this story by Lewis Smith. The headline, Earth is reaching the point of no return, says major UN environment report. The speed at which mankind is using and abusing the Earth's resources is putting humanity's survival at risk, scientists have said. The bleak assessment of the state of the environment globally was issued as an urgent call for action amid growing concerns of worldwide waste, neglect, and governmental inertia. This is from the United Nations Environment Program. It gave warning that the point of no return for the environment is fast being approached. The damage being done was regarded by the UN program as so serious that it said the time had come for the environment to be the central theme of policymaking instead of just a fringe issue, even though it would damage the vested interests of powerful industries. I mean, it doesn't get much more explicit than that. This is amazing. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Warren in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Warren, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I don't know if you remember the old joke that somebody told Bush, four Brazilian soldiers were killed in Iraq, and he wanted to know how many a Brazilian was. This is kind of how I feel about $1 trillion.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Everett Dirksen's statement, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Yeah. So I'd like to put in the perspective for the average person what $1 trillion is. If you got a paper and pencil handy?
I don't, but I'll listen.
Okay. A contributor to Midwest News had two bank tellers help him compress $1,000 in as tight a stack as they could, and it came up to 4.75 inches high. Okay. That means a million is 395 feet high, a billion is 75 miles high, and a trillion is 75,000 miles high. And our almost $9 trillion debt is growing at a rate of about 11 miles a day.
Wow. Very good, Warren. Thank you very much. That's very well said. Liz in Ferndale, California. Hey, Liz.
Hi, Mr. Hartman. I guess I feel a little awkward asking this question because it seems simple and it seems complicated. We continue to hear about global warming, all the solutions to maybe mitigate many of the problems, and yet I don't hear a lot of conversation about overpopulation of our species, which is at the root of this problem, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't. You're absolutely right. We're experiencing a population explosion. It took all of human history, 165,000 years since we, fully modern humans emerged, 165,000 years up until the year 1800 to produce our first 1 billion people. The second billion people only took 130 years, 1930. The third billion only took 30 years, 1960. And people say, the world is not overpopulated. In 1960, there were fewer than half as many people on the Earth as there are today. I remember 1960. The next billion people only took 14 years, 1974. The next billion, the fifth billion took only 13 years, 1987. And the sixth billion took only 11 years, 1999. We're now working on our seventh billion. So, yes, that is a serious problem. And in just a second, I'll riff on what the solutions are. But, Liz, to put it in context, The United States has a population of roughly 300 million, just a little over 300 million people, and, you know, which is one-third of 1 billion, and there are, you know, we're going on 7 billion here. And so that one-third of 1 billion, which would be, I can't do my math fast enough, you know, what fraction of 6.5 billion that is, but it's a very small percentage of the world population when you consider it, is generating 25% of all the greenhouse gases in the world. And so there are two interlocked problems here. One is that, yes, population is growing substantially here and around the world. The other, though, I think more significant, is that the developed and developing countries, in particular the United States, China, India, and some of the European countries, although most of them are way ahead of us, the average European uses produces one-seventh as much carbon dioxide as the average American, are disproportionately fouling the air and contributing to this problem. As to what can be done about overpopulation, there are two main theories that are out there, and they're both wrong. The first theory is that it is a problem of technology, that if only everybody in the world had access to birth control, that would solve the problem. That is a very real problem. According to Planned Parenthood, there's over 700 million families around the world who want access to birth control and just physically don't have access to it, and it is a problem. But in many countries where there is easy access to birth control, you still see families that are 8, 10, 12 people, children. So that's, you know, putting bubblegum machines with birth control pills in the corner of every third world slum is not the solution. Although, access is important. The other solution that's promoted by the World Bank guys and the IMF and the international financiers and all the big transnational corporations. And they point out that most of the world's developed countries, Japan, the United States, much of the population of the United States when you factor out immigration, Western Europe, the Western European countries, particularly Scandinavian countries, that they have all achieved not only zero population growth, but among many demographics, negative population growth, and it seems to be associated with middle and higher income levels. And so what they say is if we could just raise the income of everybody in the world to that of the average middle-class American or above, then that will solve all the problems of the world. Well, the problem with that is twofold. One, half of that 6 billion people living on the earth right now are living on less than a dollar a day. I mean, you know, almost three-quarters of the people of the 6 billion people in the world are living on less than $5 a day. So to raise 4 billion people up to even the poverty level in the United States, you know, $14,500 a year for a family of four, would be such a dramatic increase in consumption that we would need four planet Earths to sustain that level of consumption. It's just physically not possible. Secondly, you find that some of the countries that have the greatest rates of population growth, like some of the Middle Eastern countries, have the highest wealth. And there's countries where people get $30,000, $40,000 a year from the government simply for being a citizen. You know, they're distributing their oil wealth, and yet the average family size is 6, 8, 10, 12. So that's not the solution, and that's not what's causing that. When you look at it carefully and you break it down, and I wrote a chapter about this in my book, Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, that has all the research on it, what you find is the single variable that will cause any population, any group, any society, any geographic, demographic, psychographic, culture, whatever, that will cause any group to go from population growth to zero population growth or at least stable population growth is the empowerment of women. It's that simple. In societies where women are bought and sold like cattle, population explodes. In societies where women have achieved relatively equal power with men, and I don't know of any where they have actually equal power, but there's a certain threshold where they have relatively equal power with men, within a single generation, that society will go to negative population growth or zero population growth. And so I think that the women's movement around the world is the most powerful movement for human rights, for civil rights, and frankly for saving the planet, and one that needs to be highlighted more often. Did I address your issue, Liz?
You did, so articulately. I guess then I will leave you and the audience with this. It seems that no matter what we discuss in terms of mitigating the global warming problem, if we continue to ignore the population problem, what's the point? I mean, and I say that respectfully. I mean,
yeah, just like getting out in the streets and calling your member of Congress and showing up at the local party events. They're all part of the same fabric. Working for women's equality, working for population control around the world. And those two things, as I said, are absolutely interrelated, is absolutely vital. Very well said, Liz. Thank you
very much.
Sure. Thanks a lot for the call and for that comment. Kirk in Worcester, Mass. Hey, Kirk, we got about a half a minute here, I think, before we've got to take a break.
Okay, well, to say quickly, I put everything about Hillary Clinton's top advisor, Mark Penn, on my website, liberalsloveamerica.blogspot.com. He's the CEO of Thurston Marsteller, which did work for Blackwater, Shell. Hello.
Yeah, you're still on.
Oh, Shell Oil. He has a connection to the military, Argentine military.
Yeah. I've seen the news on that, Kirk, and I've seen the reports, and people can check out your website, and that's fine. I'd also add, though, that you get a large advertising agency or a large PR firm, and they have a large client list. I mean, I used to run an ad agency, and one of our clients was the CIA. Does that make me a spy? No. So 45 minutes past the hour.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Bill O'Reilly finally found a home when Fox News came along. The main fact on the factor is the facts are often wrong. Slander those who can't defend themselves without an ounce of shame. Make everything about himself, and that's how he became.
Vicious, and that is with a capital D, person who blinded by ideology.
You might be someone who'll dig it. You might be O'Reilly's kind, especially if you're a bigot with a closed and tiny mind.
Shut up!
If you have no use for reason, then you'll love the way he acts, and he'll tell you what you want to hear, regardless of the facts.
They're not facts.
Bill O'Reilly finally found a home when Fox News came along. A place he could ignore the truth and get the facts all wrong. Faced with the truth he can't refute, then he'll call you a name.
You're a lunatic.
He'll thumb his nose, the legend goes that that's how he became.
A snide, condescending idiot.
Welcome back, 9 minutes before the hour. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Suzanne in San Diego, California, listening on KLSD. Hey, Suzanne, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you, Tom, for taking my call. I'm in Qualcomm Stadium. Perhaps many people know what that is. It's the place where many of us evacuees were put up, and in a safe and decent way. But they've just evicted us all. And we've been evicted because they want to play the Chargers game on Sunday.
Have you lost your home, Suzanne?
I have no idea. We're not allowed back in the area, and I won't be allowed back in the area until Monday or Tuesday.
Wow.
There are certainly fewer of us than there were, but most of us are the ones who are in the situation of either not knowing what we have facing us, we can't go back because the flames are still raging, or we're people who know that we have lost something and are stuck in the situation of not being able to deal with it.
Is the city, the county, or FEMA, I mean, you know, you had George Bush there yesterday doing his photo op, are they not offering any other form of lodging or any place else to put you?
Correct. One thing about FEMA is we've had a bazillion, let's see, what is it, 11 miles high worth of FEMAs here, and they have been absolutely useless. The people of San Diego have been wonderful. The Red Cross has been wonderful. The police have been incredible. The National Guard, everybody, and the individual people who have come and done unbelievable things. It's been really... it's been a blessing that I can't even begin to express. But FEMA stand around with their fingers in their ears and tell you that, well, unfortunately, we don't have any way to deal with that. Well, unfortunately, we don't have any place to send you except to the concentration area of Del Mar. And Del Mar, which is probably... I'm guessing 25 to 30 miles away from here. And although I'm in a motorhome, I don't have the gasoline to get up there.
Yeah. Suzanne, do you know of any way that people who might be listening right now can participate, particularly those listening in San Diego? We have a lot of listeners on KLSD who can do something to help.
I think that remembering that many of us are not going to be ready to go back on you know, tomorrow or today, remembering that people are going to still need shelter for possibly weeks, even months to come.
Yeah.
And remembering that that's a responsibility that needs to be taken seriously, that people are not just going to turn around on Sunday and watch the football game and go back to life as usual. There are many of us, many, many, many of us, where life is never going to be the same.
Yeah.
I don't know what my situation will be, but I know that I speak for many people who are without insurance, who live in motor homes that have been destroyed, who live in mobile homes. Mobile home parks have been destroyed, and they don't even mention these. They don't count them.
Right. All the focus is on the multimillion-dollar homes, it seems.
Rancho Bernardo is such a big deal. They have at least one FEMA station opened up in Rancho Bernardo, and we've heard that there are three centers there in Rancho Bernardo and nowhere else in the city. This is a huge area. Huge area.
If people contact,
Suzanne,
if people contact the city of San Diego and offer help or offer, we'll take a family in, that kind of thing, is that something that, or for that matter, the Red Cross? I mean, is there?
Red Cross would be the place to call. The city of San Diego, run by Mayor Sanders, but he's the one that made the final decision on making Qualcomm. I don't know exactly how to call it, a ghost town now.
To evict
them. And then evicting everyone, literally evicting. Police are coming by and saying, well, you've got to get out.
Yeah, yeah. The cameras are off now. Bush has left. You know, the news cycle is dying down. The news is the big media is looking for the next story, and so now, toss you guys out. Suzanne, thank you for the heads up, and thank you for sharing your story with us.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for your support, America. We need it.
Yeah, amen.
Thank you.
Amen.
Bye-bye.
Good luck, Suzanne. Yeah, good luck and Godspeed. Margaret in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Margaret.
Oh.
Got about a minute before we've got to wrap up this hour.
Okay. I just wanted to find out, do you have any news what happened with Harriet Meyer and Karl Rove, refusing to appear, and it looks like nothing happened to them?
Right. Congress, I'd have to go back and look at specifically who it was. I believe it was Pat Leahy, but I don't think that he can act without the entire committee. But in any case, they were told, you've got to produce these documents or we will hold you in contempt of Congress. And this was back in, what, June or July, as I recall?
Yeah.
And Leahy had said that by the early October, he would hold them in contempt of Congress. And it is now, if my computer's clock is right, October 26th. And I'm quite sure that so far nothing has been done with regard to holding them in contempt of Congress. So that's another thing that you might want to call your United States senators about. Each one of us has two.
Yeah.
And say, hey, wait a minute. We've got guys, you got Myers, you got Rove, you got Gonzalez who lied to the Senate. Isn't it time to issue some of these subpoenas and some of these contempt citations? Thank you, Margaret. We'll be right back.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. You're tuned into the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you in the third hour of our program. Anything Goes Friday. Your calls on pretty much any topic you want. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. TomHartman.com for our live chat room. AirAmerica.com for our blog. And tonight, I'm broadcasting live today from Seattle. Tonight, I'll be at Elliott Bay Books at 7:30. Pam in Detroit, you're on the air, Pam. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to compliment you on your interviewing of right-wingers because you do a great job of it, and you're very fair and concise and get the point across. And I couldn't do it. I'm so angry that I have a hard time talking to people that are on the opposite side anymore. So you're good.
I'm doing a good surrogate job here.
Yes, you are. Thank you so much. And I wanted to also, I'm full of compliments, I wanted to compliment CNN and Anderson Cooper for the Planet in Peril series that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the pieces that I've seen of it are pretty strong stuff.
Yep. I saw most of both of them, I think, and it's excellent. It's very concise and it's got a lot of information. If people get a chance to see it, I think they should try. One of the problems we have, I think, is that news divisions have shut down and it's so easy to cover Hollywood that they don't invest. And this was an investment, and I think it's, they deserve kudos for that.
Yeah, they definitely went out of their way. Did you have a question, or was that's why you called?
I just wanted to call and tell you that, and thank
okay.
you very much.
Great. Well, thank you, Pam. I appreciate it. And Mike in Grand Rapids, you're on the air.
Hi. Greetings from your native soil.
Well, thank you. Yeah. The town I was born in.
I heard that more than once. Yeah, well, I'm proud of you anyway. Yeah, but I do want to take issue with the the characterization of Cheney as Darth Vader. I think it's inappropriate because Darth Vader had good in him, and
ultimately we discovered, right?
Yeah, right. And you know, in the end, his good side won out, and I think it'd be misplaced hope to think the same would happen from good old Count Dicula.
Well, I don't know, Mike. This brings up, you know, in a more serious vein. I mean, you know, this seriously and genuinely brings up the issue of evil in the world and evil people versus people whose ultimate goals are good, but they're pursuing sometimes evil means because they think that the ends justify the means, or people who even think that what they're doing is absolutely the right thing, ends, means, the whole kit and caboodle. And, you know, when we look at it with the wide view of history, we realize it's not right. And I yes, there are sociopaths out there. I guess the best guess is somewhere between 1-3% of the human population is sociopathic. People are incapable of experiencing empathy, incapable of experiencing the emotions of others and feeling them themselves in a way that would cause them to think of others as actual human beings rather than simply the characters that populate their world. And you know, when you see what you might call really true evil, it's almost always among that small percentage of sociopaths. But I don't know. I have a hard time just glibly lumping anybody whose politics I disagree with into that category. On the other hand, you know, maybe as many as 500,000 or 1 million people dead in Iraq, 4.5 million refugees, thousands of U.S. soldiers, millions of children. The scope and scale of disaster in Iraq is mind-boggling, and now these guys want to bomb Iran. And at a certain point, you look at that and you go, is this, you know, the ends justifying the means? Is this something that actually can be rationalized, in some twisted way? Or are we dealing with people who lack human empathy, who lack the ability to view Iraqis, to think of Iraqis, to have any sense at all of them as humans? Instead, you know, they think of them as, what are the slurs that they use, Hodges and ragheads and things like that. And as a consequence, they dehumanize them. And, you know, gee, it's a whole lot easier to drop bombs on people who aren't humans. I mean, we certainly, nations always do that.
Good intentions argument at that point.
Yeah, and you know, even in a quote good war end quote, there is that sort of imperative to depersonalize the other. During World War II, we referred to the Japanese as Japs and Nips, and to the Germans as Krauts, and in the mainstream media. I mean, in the mainstream media, they were referred to that way.
And cartoons and made fun of them.
Right,
the old
right.
Popeye cartoons. And
and we were, you know, battling against people who were genuinely nasty guys doing awful stuff.
Right.
But, you know, and what it does is it highlights the reality of what a really god-awful thing it is to kill other human beings. And war is organized, legalized mass murder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, so many people have said, you know, war should be the absolute last thing that you do. And anything even resembling war, like, oh, let's just do a surgical, aerial bombardment or whatever, should be the very last thing you do, because we're talking about murder here. And the first precondition to facilitate that kind of murder and get approval from the people is to dehumanize the enemy, to turn them into an enemy. And that's the drumbeat that we're seeing now, and it does concern me. It concerns me terribly. Whether Dick Cheney, is a sociopath, or George W. Bush, for that matter, frankly, I don't think is ours to judge. I have my concerns, frankly, about Mr. Bush. Really, all we can do, I mean, you know, we can't impeach a guy for being a sociopath. You can't, you know, we can't force him to have therapy or go through a 12-step program or whatever. You can't give him back his, you know, Mr. You can't give Mr. Grinch back his heart. I mean, maybe in the movie they did, but so what we have to do is we have to stand up against the policies. As an earlier caller said, you know, we have to be out in the streets. We have to be calling our members of Congress. We have to be writing letters to the editor of newspapers. We have to be calling into radio shows, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I appreciate your call and your sentiment and your thoughts on this. And absolutely, you know, it really highlights a reality that is a tough one, I think, for any nation that has committed an aggressive war. I'm sure that after when Poland was invaded by the Germans in the 30s, the first aggressive war that, you know, after the Anschluss, after Austria, which Hitler justified as a reuniting of two German-speaking countries. But, you know, Poland, oh, they have weapons of mass destruction on the border. I'm sure that the Germans were very, very, many Germans were very concerned about that. And yet the demonization was going on. Is it Kyle in Detroit? Kyle in Detroit. Hey, what's up? You're on the air, Kyle.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just fine. What's up?
Well, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I actually also podcast your Portland show in the morning.
Uh-huh.
What I wanted to say is that you had gotten me inspired to get involved, to get out and try to get active. And at first I started, you know, just with the writing letters by myself to the editor, to my politicians. And I found something called Camp Wellstone. I don't know if you've heard about this. Just yesterday, actually, was the anniversary of the death of Paul Wellstone, the senator from Minnesota.
Right.
There's a group of people who founded an organization, wellstone.org, and they're holding classes around the country to teach people how to be citizen activists, how to run for office, and how to work on campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And they held a class in Lansing here in Michigan earlier this month.
That's great. This is sort of like what Jim Dean's organization, Democracy for America, democracyforamerica.com, is doing.
Exactly. Yep.
And actually, you know, they're training trainers, so maybe this is somebody who went through one of their programs.
A few of the people, I think, did. There was a bunch of people. Most of the people that came out were from Minnesota, but there were a few people who they brought in to teach specific parts of the classes that were experts in other fields. I went through the citizen activist track.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually brought in professional lobbyists who, I mean, they went through and they taught you how to organize a base around an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a gathering of people, how to then form coalitions between your groups, how to stage media events to highlight an issue,
mm-hmm.
Even how to meet with your representatives. They even had us go through with the professional lobbyist exercises, how to set up the meetings with your representatives, how to act, how to present your case. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say is, you know, anybody who is out there who feels, you know, that they want to get involved, but they don't know how, either Democracy for America or there's also wellstone.org. If they're not in your area, you can go to them.
Yeah, or you can, yeah, or bring them in.
Yeah, or you can
get a bunch of people together and bring the folks in. Wellstone.org and democracyforamerica.com. Kyle, thanks a lot for the heads up. Great talking with you today. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Seattle. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
But not bad enough. You know you had it coming because you played so rough.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Ellen Ratner on the line. Ellen with Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. What's up in Washington, D.C., Ellen?
Well, I think the big news, I know you were talking to somebody who was in the stadium after the fires in California, but what I was shocked about was the FEMA press conference, which was not a press conference, but was in fact FEMA employees asking questions. It was run on MSNBC. It was run on Fox yesterday. I asked the first question about it this morning at the White House gaggle, and Tony Fredo said that they were looking into it and didn't have an answer. So then NBC followed up this afternoon at the press conference, and the White House said they did not know about it. They obviously didn't approve of it. And then I asked, well, what about this morning call that happens between various agencies and the White House, you know, where sort of the agenda of the day is discussed and whether any briefings, et cetera. And Dana Perino said to me that the Department of Homeland Security is on the call. The FEMA is not on the call, and she doesn't know whether the Department of Homeland Security knew about this fake press conference that was broadcast live.
Amazing. Amazing. Colin, we had a... Go ahead.
And what's so fascinating is when I was talking about this right before the briefing with some of my colleagues sitting next to me in the White House, everybody said, well, who's surprised? I mean, at this point, people are just not even surprised at being spun like that.
Yeah, heck of a job, new brownie.
That's right. Exactly.
It's amazing. Ellen, we had a caller. I've lost my internet connection here in Seattle right now, and I was trying to get an answer to a caller. Maybe you have it. I'm curious if you know that back in the summer, Senator Leahy and others were threatening Harriet Myers and Gonzalez and others with contempt of Congress citations and whatnot if they didn't, you know, produce documents. There was actually a variety of different things from Gonzalez's testimony to the emails, you know, the missing White House emails and whatnot.
Right.
And Leahy had said we will cite you in early October. And my understanding is that no citation has yet been issued. On the other hand, during the break, Louise called and said, because as I said, I can't access the web right now, called and said, no, there's actually something going on. There's a story over at Raspberry about
it. There is something going on. Actually, Senator Patrick Leahy has said that he does want a response, particularly around the torture policy. Now, there's also been a question about the situation with the FISA and the wiretaps in the White House, as you know, turned over something. He also wrote a letter to Fred Fielding, who's counsel to the president, about turning over some of the documents. And he said it was a sort of lengthy letter that he wants these documents. And he said that it would essentially aid the administration, aid the Congress on understanding the administration's policy and also what happened under General Gonzalez's tenure. So he then came up with, I'm trying to count them right now, a 6-point questions that he wants, and he wants prompt response. All documents produced by the Department of Justice on interrogation, all things deal mainly interrogation, but also, and I guess this dealt with more interrogation than the FISA issue, but it does deal with interrogation. And also, as you know, they want a response on this waterboarding issue, and McCain came out and said that he considers waterboarding torture.
Yeah, McCain actually made a very, very strong statement about it, in fact. And has on numerous occasions, and I thought it was, you know, his statement that this is what Pol Pot did in Cambodia, this is what the Burmese are doing to the monks right now as we speak, this is torture, this is not something that should be done by the United States of America. And, you know, I salute Senator McCain for saying that, for speaking out against the power in his own party, frankly.
But the issue is, Leahy did send a strong worded letter. The question is whether Leahy and Arlen Specter, as his ranking member, will really continue to bear down on it. And that's right. Anybody's guess.
Are they going to follow through? What else is going on in Washington, D.C. today?
Okay, well, there's a whole question about what has happened with Putin and the issue of the Iran sanctions and whether Putin agrees or doesn't agree and where they are in terms of the White House. All the White House would say, and they probably said it 10 different ways today, is that there's a very complicated relationship with regards to Russia, and that Russia does agree, supposedly, with trying to get a Security Council resolution. But it doesn't really say whether Russia is going to help the United States in terms of any of the sanctions issues, because Russia's been very clear about these sanctions and the fact that they're not too excited about them.
Yeah, well, they're also doing a lot of business with Iran, but this is a unilateral sanction. This strikes me as bizarre that just we would say, okay, one country, we are going to impose these sanctions without getting the cooperation of the world community.
No,
I guess you know Britain
Cuba.
And Israel are on board with us or are supportive of it, but you know it's not the world community.
One last real fast one today at the morning gavel, Tony Fredo said that the only principle Ron Emanuel had was in high school.
Oh, geez. Personal attacks. This is what it's come down to. The White House is using personal attacks because they can't get their way. Amazing. Ellen Ratner, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign, sitting there by the left turn line. Flag on a wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him, the VA budget's just stretched so thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore.
34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com. Lisa in Glendale, California. You're on the air, Lisa.
Good morning, Tom. I'd like to start by saying that I'm liberal, very progressive, well-read, but I am shy. I am pretty reserved around social settings, and my family is not. My family is also very right-wing, very conservative, and now that the holidays are coming up, it's time for the shouting matches that are inevitable.
Oh, my.
And I know you're going to say, well, just don't get into it with them, but trust me when I tell you it's unavoidable. And I'd like to calmly get across my opinions and what I've read and studied about the Iraq War, which is, you know, first and foremost, the most important topic that we discuss, and, you know, the economy and what's going on in the world. And, you know, I'm 5-1 outnumbered. So my question to you is, do you know of a book, any type of publication or website that is similar to Ann Coulter's How to Talk to Liberals If You Have to, Except for Us? Something that would give me, you know, I could study to give me talking points going in, because many times I just leave the room crying, and
yeah.
I'm going to stick to my guns, and I want to get my point across.
Well, at the risk of sounding like I'm tooting my own horn here, Lisa, the new book that I have out, Cracking the Code, is specifically about communication strategies, how to frame arguments, how to talk to people in language that they understand, how to make illustrations that they can see, how to give them concepts that they can get a hold of. You know, how to make things real for people with whom you may disagree or who may disagree with you, as well as, you know, people you're agreeing with. My book Screwed has virtually all the economic arguments.
I read Screwed.
Yeah, so as far as the war goes, Naomi Klein's book Disaster Capitalism is extraordinary. It's not just about the Iraq War, but it is probably one of the very best well-written books on you know, what's going on, why it's going on, how it's going on, that's out there. David Harvey's A Brief History of Neoliberalism is another one, although that's written more from a British perspective, in as much as, you know, he uses the word neoliberalism, which most Americans don't have a clue what it means. But that would be my short list. The other suggestion is just saying, And there's nothing wrong with saying it, well, you know, okay, that's your opinion, and I understand that you hold that opinion, and I have a different opinion, but I care about you enough and about this family enough that I don't want to get into a fight about it. So I'm just going to, you know, you're not going to change my mind, I'm not going to change yours, so, you know, let's talk about sports or, you know, let's talk about the kids or something.
Yeah, I've tried that, and
yeah.
I've been called un-American, communist, hippie.
Yeah.
A lesbian, even though I'm not, because I'm a feminist.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would just once, one year, have a calm conversation with my family, with my cousins, and say, you know, just read these books. Just
right.
See this, you know, go to this website.
But see, the reality is they won't do that because they have no interest in hearing the other side. I mean, the only other thing I can say is, I hope that in my almost daily debates with conservatives here, where I don't you know, call people names and engage in personal attacks. I can model for you some of these things, and there may be some value in that. I mean, that's one of the main reasons I do it. But it's a tough one, particularly a family member who's willing to blow up a family over politics. I mean, that's really tragic.
Well, I think this is going to be my last year with the extended bunch. I'm convinced I'm adopted. I'm adopted into a family of rednecks.
By aliens.
Yeah. Right. But thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Lisa. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. That's a tough one. Fred in San Diego. You're on the air, Fred. What's up?
Hey, Tom, for your last caller?
Yeah.
Instead of confronting her relatives, maybe she should just give them copies of your books for Christmas.
Well, that's a possibility.
Sure.
Yeah.
I want to get into this situation with Iran because, frankly, I think it's quite frightening. I believe it could lead to a direct confrontation with Russia. Putin evidently has compared this missile defense shield to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes, he is very, very upset about this. Now, the Bush administration, you know, to keep this current and in context, has started the process of backing off from this. And, you know, what I'm not sure of is whether they're trying to achieve some sort of a compromise with Putin or whether they're trying to do a publicity stunt. I don't think Putin is going to go along with it. In fact, he's already said he's not going to go along with it. But what they're saying now is rather than putting operational missiles into Czechoslovakia and Poland, they're going to build the bases which, you know, could be used, could base the operational missiles. And if the threat from Iran, which is what they're claiming they're doing all this for, if the threat from Iran materializes, or when it does in their minds, then they will bring in the missiles and make them operational, which is something that could be done in a matter of days.
Well, in regards to Iran, I want to get to 3 points.
Yeah.
Because I think we need to get past the propaganda and the hypocrisy. First, it's important to remember that Iran and Syria are both members of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Second, it's important to remember that Russia has designed and fueled Iran's nuclear program. Third, it's important to remember that the Bush administration has allied itself, aided and supported India, Pakistan, and Israel. These are three countries, all rogue nations, that refuse to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, who have threatened and attacked its neighbors, and they all possess nuclear weapons.
Right, and we should, for those listeners who may not know, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty says that, number one, you're not going to build nukes, and number two, that you're going to allow the IAEA, the International Atomic Inspection, what is it, International Atomic Energy Agency, whatever it is, Mohammed El-Baradei and company, you're going to allow the UN's inspection agency to come into your country and check out what's going on there. And you're absolutely right. Iran is a signatory to that. And
well, here's where I think it's important is, first of all, look at the demeanor of Putin. I don't believe he will blink.
No.
Second of all,
the guy's a martial artist. He's a KGB. He's stone cold.
A showdown with this guy.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to remember something. When Nancy Pelosi took impeachment off the table, what she did was that she took a part of the Constitution off the table. And what she put on the table by leaving Bush and Cheney in office is the possibility of World War III, and I believe, Tom, it is a real possibility now.
Yeah, I agree with you, and in all regards, and I think it was a terrible mistake. I understand at the time that she said it, just before the elections, that, you know, the whole point was, since she's next in line for secession, if Bush and Cheney were impeached, you know, it was actually even arguably wise to say, you know, I'm not going to pursue something that's just going to aggrandize power to myself, unlike, for example, Newt Gingrich. But after the elections, frankly, I think that she should have said all options are on the table. If somebody's committed a crime, this is the remedy that's provided for in the Constitution.
Frankly, Tom, Nancy Pelosi does not have the authority to take any part of the Constitution off the table, and I believe she should be removed in her position as Speaker of the House for doing just that.
Well, yeah, I'm not willing to go that far. My suggestion is that all of us be lobbying Nancy Pelosi and others. It's not just her; it's Steny Hoyer. And as Bernie pointed out, I mean, you've got the Democratic Party is more of a coalition than a party, and you've got some members of the Democratic Party who are as conservative, who are more conservative than some of the few rare liberals, you know, like Susan Collins from Maine, in the Republican Party. And you know, it's a really tough one. So, you know, I appreciate your point and your call and your perspective and first of all, there is no way for us, at least that I know of, to say, okay, we're going to take Nancy Pelosi out as leader. Although you can lobby your member of the House of Representatives to not vote for her as leader next time around, but right now I think that we need to be telling her, you know, this is something that should be considered. There are crimes. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Tom. How far the paradigm has shifted whenever we say Susan Collins is a liberal.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
But she's a good Republican. She's just an Eisenhower Republican.
Well, like Armin Spector, too, they say really great things, and narrative is important, but they don't act on it. That's the problem.
Yeah, more often than not, yeah.
Right. Well, I called to let your listeners know that the National Religious Campaign Against Torture is showing Rory Kennedy's Ghosts Against Abu Ghraib documentary this week in a bunch of churches or temples or otherwise any sacred space that makes itself available to show it. So people can go to tortureisamoralissue.org to find out if there is a place near them that is showing the film and to sign the statement of conscience, except for the people in Seattle. They have to go and see you tonight. And I know watching the film requires some courage, and Americans just have to rely on their highest ideals to overcome the administration's, I think, totally naked political game of redefining the word torture. We, the people, have to define it and say it's morally wrong, no matter who's doing it, to whomever, and whenever. And in Pittsburgh, it's being shown tonight at the Allegheny Unitarian Universalist Church located in the North Side.
Great. Bonnie, once again, what was the website?
Torture is a moral issue.org. Yes.
Great. Bonnie, thank you so much. I appreciate the call. Mm-hmm. And also, I would recommend that people go see the movie Rendition. It's a brilliant movie. I mean, if you just want to go to see a good movie and be entertained and all that stuff the movies do, it's a brilliant movie, and it is so germane to these issues. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And special thanks to Tall Paul and Dave McDonald and all the great folks here at Talk 1090 who have given me a studio for the day to do the show from, to my producer David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirchner at Air America New York, putting the show together on that end, to Ben and Shelby, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. Ed in Pennsylvania. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing? What's your show? I have a real simple suggestion about a way to combat this stupid watch list and this horrible surveillance spying program. And just for what it's worth, here it is. Basically, some people did it back under Nixon. I remember when he had essentially the same thing, not as bad as Bush, but there were some celebrities that got together. I think Paul Newman did this, where they basically petitioned, they asked to be added. They specifically asked, please put me on your watch list because I would be honored. And I think that would be a good approach if somehow we get a movement like that going here in the United States, because basically you want to mock this thing because it deserves to be mocked. I mean, I know it's dangerous, but the way you combat this insanity is basically, I think the best way is to make fun of it. And if we could somehow get, I for what it's worth, I volunteer to be number one. Please put me on the list. Nothing would honor me more than to be added to Bush's watch list.
Okay, Alberto, go for Ed.
I think it's
a good point, Ed. The problem is that we're talking about cutting people's ability to use an airplane. You know,
no, I'm serious. No, that's serious.
And for some people, that means, you know, the end of their profession or their ability to make a living.
I understand. I know. No, it's very, very serious. And that's kind of the point, too.
But this is, you know, like Medea Benjamin trying to get into Canada last week. We had her on the program, you know, the founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange. And it's like it's totally bizarre. It's totally bizarre.
Well, for what it's worth, I do. Bush, to me, has all the signs clearly of a sociopath. I mean, I will go out on a limb and say that the guy. I mean, it's pretty classic too. Of someone that was born into wealth and completely had lived a cloistered life his entire life from the day he was born, and he's got a lot of signs of being a sociopath. He's definitely detached from reality.
It may well be, Ed, and it may well not be. I mean, the point I think is that we have to deal with his policies tragically. Yeah, but that's what has to be dealt with. And frankly, I think that we need to deal with the possibility of impeachment and put it back on the table.
I would live for that day. I would love.
Dennis Kucinich is talking about bringing this up before Thanksgiving, and good on him for it. And you can let him know what you think about it over at Kucinich.us. And yes, last week or a couple days ago when we had a caller about that, I did go over to Kucinich's website and make a contribution. So, Kucinich and Edwards so far are people I've given money to.
Can I make one comment about the impeachment? I know, and then I'll get off the line. A lot of Democrats I've heard, matter of fact, there was one on Bill Maher last week that made this point. I think it's a horrible point that they don't want to impeach Bush because the alternative, quote unquote, would be worse, meaning Cheney. But essentially, what they're saying is that's implying that all a president has to do is get a vice president worse than him, and then that means they're safe from impeachment.
And the Constitution does not forbid a dual impeachment.
Right, right. So anyway, yeah, impeachment is really something that Democrats should do. Hear us, Pelosi. Right. Please do it. Okay.
There you go, Ed. Thanks a lot. I appreciate
the
call.
Thank you.
I mean, this is and I think that Dennis Kucinich in going after Cheney first. I think that was very wise, because basically what it would do is uncover the crimes. And once the crimes have been uncovered, then you say, okay, you know, let's go ahead. Rich in California, you're on the air, Rich.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to jump on that impeachment bandwagon. I think we do need to get Pelosi to put impeachment back on the table. At what point does this, you know, war with Iran thing become an emergency based on past history of the administration? What other remedy do we have that they're most likely to just go ahead and get into this war? We have purse strings, you know, we have lobbying, we can call our, representatives all we want, but I think.
Well, that's what it has to be, though, Rich. I mean, the fact of the matter is, even if Nancy Pelosi came out this afternoon and said, okay, I'm putting impeachment back on the table, if she doesn't have a majority of, you know, just a simple majority, I believe, maybe it requires more. It might be 2/3 or 3/4. But in any case, if she doesn't have enough members of the House of Representatives to go along with it, then, you know, she's got a problem. She can't. It's not on the table. And so, frankly, I think that it's going to be a matter of us pushing our individual members of Congress to say, please consider impeachment as a real and viable possibility, and please at least let's initiate investigations into whether impeachment should be proceeding proceedings as a starting point. And that's going to require a critical mass in Congress. So, you know, I appreciate your point, and you know, it's well said, but we have to get that critical mass, and that means
you got to do both.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call. We have about a half a minute, three quarters of a minute here left. Dave in Culver City, you're on the air. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Tom. To that woman visiting her family,
mm-hmm.
I would say two things. Lincoln said, "I disarm my enemies by making them my friend."
Yeah.
And you sell it where it can be sold. The 25% of the people that are supporting Bush, you're never going to get them to buy.
Yeah, that was my point. I mean, I ultimately, with my dad, long before he died, I mean, my dad and I have been having political fights basically since the Vietnam War. And, the last 10, 15 years of his life or so, you know, we just reached the point where, okay, let's not talk about politics.
Right.
Because I love you, Dad. Because he'd get really upset. And, I've finally figured out how to have the discussions without myself getting upset. But, it's a shame to provoke members of your family. Not a good place to go. Thanks a lot for the call.
Have a great weekend, Tom.
Thank you. You too. And thanks so much for listening to the program today. And thanks again to the folks here at Talk 1090 in Seattle for hosting us. We'll be at Elliott Bay Bookstore tonight in Seattle. And more coming up down the road, as I'll be sharing with you next week. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. Keep it going.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.